The shir will be in the memory of Rabbi Schwartz, or of Gedaliah Dov ben Avram. Right. So, and those of you who don't know, he was the head of the Beis Din in America. He was the bottom line. That's what it came down to. He was the bottom line. Okay, at least on a theoretical level, I agreed to give a shir that was both the Parsha and Chanukah. I don't know how, by the way. That's what they asked me to do. And they said they were going to publicize it, but I looked in the Torah tidbits. I didn't see anything about it, so I just figured that I'm free. I can just talk about what I want to. So I just want to make sure, you know what, I do want to keep my word. So I'm going to talk about the Parsha and Chanukah. So let me start with Chanukah. Everybody should have a happy Chanukah. Okay, now let's go to the Parsha. Let's start with source number two. We're going to ignore the psukim and go straight to source number two, which is the Or HaTzafun. Those of you who don't know who the Or HaTzafun is, you don't know the code. Tzafun is a code. The code actually is, if you look at the person's name, which is to the left, Naftali, Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel. So you look at Tzafun there, you can see the Tzvi, the Finkel, the Nosson, all there. He's otherwise known as the Alter from Slobodka. Okay? He never wrote anything. His students collected things. If you know who Rina Quint is, I know some may know Rina. Rina and Manny Elav HaShalom. Manny's father was actually one of the main person whose notes, he was a Talmud in Slobodka, and it was his notes that was used primarily in order to publish this. And he was an interesting fellow because he was a Talmud of Slobodka, and he was one of the secretaries of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Go figure that out. But he was a non-Chassid. He was a Slobodka, you know, Talmud. But he was one of the fellows who would write letters when people asked the Rebbe questions, and the Rebbe would sign off on it at the end. So those who didn't know, he had three different secretaries or so. So you're going to get very quickly what he's going to say, and there's going to be really only one question, and that is it true what he's saying? Kishanu lomdim parshat mechirat Yosef. We learn about the episode of the sale of Yosef. It's very difficult for us to free ourselves from the common understanding, bein hamonim, from the masses, ki ilu hoya kan maase achzariyut mitzada achim, klape Yosef, as if the brothers displayed cruelty towards Yosef, atzmam uvsaram alodavar bikapo, you know, by themselves, personally, without, you know, any justification. And as if, you know, based upon their jealousy, biglal ktonet hapasim, because of the coat of many colors, if that's what that means, ukimashma'ot hakatuv, in the way that the pshat seems to present itself, hitnaklu lamito, that's why they conspired to kill him. Hishlichu labor machru l'ishmaelim, they threw him in the pit and they sold him to the Ishmaelim. Vigormu tsar kazel avim azaken, and they caused their elderly father an incredible amount of pain. Shenafsho ita kashura b'nafsho shel Yosef, because his soul was intertwined with his son's soul. Now, he just now told you that a lot of people read the pshat. Now, I'm not so sure that that's a bad thing, to read the pshat, which means right away, if it depends, again, it depends where you stand on this. Some of you stand on this with him, with the altar, and you're saying to yourself, listen, these people are all tzaddikim, they're the Shiftei Ka, they're the children of Yaakov, and it's not possible that they did something which is as bad as it looks. There has to be an explanation. There's no way it's so bad. And on the other hand, there are those of us who are going to look and say, well, Eim pshuto yotze midei that the Torah wrote it in this way, obviously for a reason, that it wanted us to understand it, at least on this level. Maybe there are other deeper levels, but this is one of the levels. And he just now, his opening gambit was, you know, there are some people who understand that the Chumash says what it says. Yes. And the reason why they understand it is because that's what the Chumash says. So, as I said, some of you are prepared to embrace what he's going to say, and some of you are going to be very cautious and say, okay, here comes the cover-up. And one of the things is that in terms of Chazal, and it's actually, you know, the famous Chazals, what makes a Chazal famous? It makes it famous when it makes it into the davening. So, for example, for the tefillah of Musaf and Yom Kippur, and we have over there a wonderful, terrible piyut, which tells us that because of Mechiras Yosef is the reason why we have the Asara Ruge Malchus. So therefore, if he was going to say, no, but that never really happened, so what do? You're not going to say that piyut? You're going to say the one who wrote that piyut got it wrong? And we have the Arizei Levanon. We have that also that we say on Tisha B'Av. That's why it's really famous. It's on Yom Kippur, it's there, and it's on Tisha B'Av, it's there. So, you know, again, how far are you going to push us? So we're going to read a little bit. Kedei lotzi ta'ut zemi alev, in order to remove this mistake from one's heart, kedei lotzayin et dvrei hamifaresha kadmon Rabbi Ovadia Sforno. So, of course, you have to love the way he presents him. An early commentary that already gives authenticity as well. This Sforno, shekol achim ayu tzadikim gemorim, that all of the brothers were tzadikim. Ki acheret lo yitachein shishmoteim yiyu charutim al choshen hamishpat, because otherwise it couldn't be that their names would be on the choshen lefnei Hashem lizikaron. Ela shem mitzio Yosef mishpat mavet al yisod halacha. Rather, they held a trial based upon halacha, saying habala hargecha. Hashkem lahargo, that you're allowed to take a preemptive strike against somebody who's coming to kill you. Now, I'm going to point out that part of what he said is true, and part of what he said isn't true. Don't get upset with me that I say this. I know why he slipped, and I know exactly what it is that happened. So let me now back up and say something which maybe a lot of us are aware of. There is a rabbinic approach that the brothers actually held a trial. They put Yosef on trial, and they found him guilty, and they decided, based upon the rules of the Torah, he is somebody who should be killed. And that's pretty much what he just now told us. The only thing that was missing, though, and this is critical, the part which was missing is that if we go and read the Sforno now, and look, does the Sforno actually say what he just now said? So I'll admit the Sforno said 80% of it, but it's the 20% which is missing, which is intriguing to me. And it's that 20% which we're actually going to be paying attention to today. So let's go back and do something very simple. We're going to look at the Sforno, because he just now told us that we should be looking at the Sforno. It's a source number 5. V'yinaklu oto lahamito. Hine lashon nachal yore al hamtza'a lahara. Kimo asher nachlu lahem. Omer shechashvu et Yosef bilibam nochal lahamit. V'shaba aleihem lo ledrush shlomam el lemtzo aleihem alila o lachtiyam kedei shekalalam aviyem o ya'anisham hakel yitbarach v'yisher hu levado baruch mibanim. So I didn't explain word for word, let me explain. He says, when they see Yosef coming, they think in their hearts that he is coming to kill them, or he is coming in order to set them up for failure. He is going to report to their father they did something bad. He's going to make sure, either in the eyes of God or somehow, or in the eyes of Yaakov, they will not be receiving blessings. And therefore, he will be the only brother, the only son who will be blessed. And therefore, they see Yosef as a narcissist. They see Yosef as a dangerous narcissist. They see him as somebody who has no interest in his brothers whatsoever, which by the way, would be worthwhile to test that just in terms of what we actually have seen in the text. He then says that, we'll skip a little bit, the word nachal, he says, lashon lamito, shiamitu atachiv, that he was coming to kill them, so therefore they were able to respond and they were able to kill him. Now, if you just, I'm not reading the whole thing right now, but if you skim through the whole thing, you'll notice that there is something which is missing over here. Kigam she'amru aval hashamim anachnu, even later on when they admitted, but we're guilty, right? Alachenu lo amru shetihe ashmatam amachirato omitato el achziratam behitchanenu. The only thing they have admitted, they said, oh, but we're guilty. We heard our brothers cry. We heard him screaming. So he's saying, oh, the Sforno is saying, oh, look, they never said we were wrong what we did. We were just wrong to cause him that pain. V'nigid akatuv kitziaro belibam v'chashvu et Yosef lenochal u'minakesh benafsham lamitam ba'olam hazeh o ba'olam haba, that Yosef was going to cause them damage in this world, or spiritual damage, o b'shneim or both v'torah amra ha'balar gacha. And the Torah taught us that if somebody comes to get you, then you're allowed to defend yourself. Now, what was missing? Did anybody catch what was missing in his whole presentation? There was one thing that was missing. Let me just explain what it is that he said. He's saying that they acted in self-defense. They thought Yosef is coming out to kill them, so they acted in self-defense. Now, to act in self-defense which he then tells us is a Torah principle. And indeed, I don't actually need a Torah principle to tell me I'm allowed to protect myself in self-defense. I think survival instincts is one of the oldest instincts that we have. I think even had the Torah not said it, we would all understand. If somebody's coming to damage you, then you're allowed to protect yourself. You're allowed to protect yourself. You're allowed to protect your property. Again, how much and how, all that we cleave on the side. So what did the Sforno say? But more importantly, what didn't he say? Because what he didn't say is actually what was claimed by the Alter from Slobodka that he did say. And then, as I said, that's what I want to hone in on. Because it would be quite interesting. That's what he said. Actually, if I want to look and go a little bit further back, which is a bit of a question that I have, I don't know why he started there, why he started the Sforno, you know, ancient commentary. It's maybe he didn't see it. Rav Chaim Paltiel, it's one of the Balei HaTosfot, in source number 3, Vayiru Otom Mirachok, they saw him from afar. Ve'im Tomer Me'achar Shehayu Kol Kach Tzadikim. They were old tzadikim. Ma'al B'da'atam Larogoto. They were old tzadikim. How could they kill him? Ve'yesh Lomar Shekach Haitas Svaratam. This was their thinking. Kevin Shemagid Sha'anu Megalim Arayot. Because Yosef has reported, and perhaps we'll take a look at this as well. Yosef reported that we do sexual sins, V'ochlev Merachai, and we, you know, beg Shev Mitzvah B'nei Noach. We eat from live animals in Cain. Humagid Aleinu Dvarim Sha'anu Chayavim Aleim Mita. Yosef is claiming that we've done things that we should be killed for in Cain. Hu Rodef Otanu. Yosef is a Rodef. Yosef is trying to kill us. In Cain, Anu Omrim Abadah Hergachash came there go. Somebody comes to kill you, you go kill him. So, by the way, I just find it fascinating that he went to the Sforno and says, oh, look how old the Sforno is. By the way, you want the dates. The Sforno is 1480 to 1530. Chaim Paltiel is hundreds of years before that. And now, if you notice, it's almost word for word of what was said that the Sforno said. It's right there, as I said, in earlier sources. But I'm going to say it again. There's something missing. Did you notice what's missing? Any of you notice? Okay, I'll help you. You want a hint? A hint is the lawyers over here should get it. Why should the lawyers get it? Because he claimed that there was a trial. He claims the brothers put him on trial. And both in Rav Chaim Paltiel and in the Sforno, there's no trial over there. All that there is a principle of law. If somebody's coming to kill you, then you act in self-defense. But by the way, notice something. That is not something which a judge does. Quite the opposite. That's self-defense, what a victim does. Which means the very logic that he's using is one, if somebody comes to hurt you, then you're allowed to defend yourself. That's not a trial. That's self-defense. Nonetheless, he said that the brothers put him on trial. And now you have to ask yourself, where in the world did the Alter from Slobodka get this from? And saying, no, just in case you're reading it and you think this is what happened and so on. No, the brothers, again, to say they acted within a Torah principle of self-defense, I get that. But it was that, I told you, 80% is there. But to go for that extra 20% and say there was actually a trial. Now, show of hands, those of you who have hands that I can see. How many of you actually have ever heard that the brothers put Yosef on trial? Ah, good. So now, who's the first one who ever said it? Is it a Gemara? Is it a Medrash? Is it like who said it? So I spent some time this week... I see Mark got the answer right. I spent some time this week trying to find who the first one is to say it, so I cannot guarantee you that I have found it. But all that I can tell you is that there was really something very interesting, which actually made me very suspicious, that most of the commentaries that I found who quote it say it was said in the name of the Shlah. The Shlah Kadosh, which I'll come to in a second. Now, whenever somebody says it's said in the name of, normally means that somebody quoted him, but we have no idea where it is. Because otherwise, you wouldn't say it's said in the name of, you'd say the Shlah said it. So when I see one and two and three and four different people saying, oh, it's said in the name of the Shlah, so a couple of conclusions come in my head. One is that nobody can find somebody earlier, and two, they can't even find him, but they just know that people say that it's him. Throw that away. Because I found it in the Shlah in a couple minutes. I found it very, very easily, and I can't begin to understand why it is that they all couldn't find the Shlah, and they just said, oh, somebody said in the name of the Shlah. And that also sometimes happens. Somebody quotes something, and then it gets life of its own, but the Shlah actually said it. Who is the Shlah? The Shlah is Rav Yeshayahu Halevi Horowitz. He was one of the key individuals who brings over the Kabbalah of the Arizal into Europe. Okay, he wrote a book called the Shnei Luchot HaBrit, which is a fascinating book. It is full of Kabbalistic ideas. He writes them in an accessible manner for the most part, which means for the most part it's Hebrew and not Aramaic, and that's when you get lost, when people start quoting Zohars in Zohar language instead of quoting things in Hebrew. So it really is quite accessible, and we're going to try to, you know, look at some sections in the Shla, and then we're going to see, you know, exactly where this comes from. So we'll go down, we'll take a look at the Shla. Sefer HaShla, Shnei Luchot HaBrit, that's the Shla, Shnei Luchot HaBrit. HaShla HaKadosh, don't ask me why, there are a couple of books that we call them HaKadosh. The Orachaim HaKadosh, the Shla HaKadosh, the Ari HaKadosh. Some people got Kadosh by them. Nachzor L'inyan, maybe I should name my next book something with Kadosh in it, then they'll be stuck, right? They'll have to call it HaKadosh also. Nachzor L'inyan. Malchut Yosef einu ela kedei liot Yisrael la'am, lamid malchut Yehuda, v'ashvatim lo avinu davar zeh, rak hayu sfarim ach lo hamelucha. So he starts with this kingship of Yosef versus the kingship of Yehuda. And by the way, that is a thing. That really is important. That really is the central issue which is taking place. And maybe this will sound like a contradiction in terms. It's the central issue below the surface is who will be king. And Yosef was chosen by Yaakov initially. And somehow the book of Bereishit comes to a surprise ending when out of nowhere Yehuda ends up, you know, grabbing it right back. The brothers didn't understand this. Rak Yisfarim. They didn't understand that the whole role of Mashiach ben Yosef, notice I just threw in Mashiach ben Yosef, is in order to prepare the way for Mashiach ben David. They just thought that he himself wanted to take it for himself. There they went to Dotan, Klomar, Ladun Oto Bidat Torah. By the way, somehow they got that out of the word Dotaina. They see the word Dat and din in that word, dat and din. They went to Dotana, dat and din. Now, some of you are going to like that, and some of you are not going to like that, because that's where he's getting the mishpat from. They went to Dotan, klomar, ladun oto bidat Torah, v'hiskimu kulam shehu ben mavet, and they all agreed that he should be put to death. By the way, therefore, they follow Torah law. Afilu b'nei bilua v'zilpa ohavav, who liked him, iskimu ke mitzad din v'dat. That's daton. Din and dat. Therefore, that's where this whole mishpat, by the way, comes from. It's a play on the word dotan or dotona. David, he therefore deserved to die. Anybody who doesn't accept Malchut Beit David doesn't accept the Shechina itself. And that's what the rabbis say. That even the Shechina agreed with them. And by the way, if you're reading with me right now, you would have thought that the Shechina agreed with the trial that just now took place, but that's the impression he gave you. Klomar, ki cholik kual Shechina mi'ach shecholik amachut Beit David. That's why the Shechina was with him. By the way, I can assure you that everything he's saying there is imaginary. It's imaginary for so many reasons. So that's part of what I have to come back to. The Midrash you just quoted, Shitvo Shechina Imayim, it does say that, but it doesn't say what he implied over here. Ki cholik kol Shechina me'ach shecholik amach Beit David. Al kein bitvaday Yosef elachav ra'ushu hu molech, when Yosef reveals himself and they see that he is in fact a king, ratzu lahargo, they wanted to kill him again in Parshat Vayigash. So that's essentially what they just now said. They wanted to kill Yosef once, and now they realize he's still alive. Let's go and kill him again because Yosef is a ben mavis. If you want, I don't know how hard I should work. If you're going to say that this really was Alpid Torah, they're putting him on trial on Torah. Can I state the obvious? They're all pasul la'edut and they're pasul la'dun. Every one of them they're related to. Not only they're related to him, they don't like him. You're not allowed to be a judge in a case of somebody you don't like. They're puzzled for witnesses. They're puzzled to be judges. They're puzzled even if they weren't related, and they are related, and they stand to gain by his death for all kinds of reasons. So what are you talking about that they judge them out b'din Torah? Which means, I just hope you all understand that this is impossible to say. Yes, people say it. And a lot of people say it in the name of the Shla. And not only do they say it in the name of the Shla, now you know the Shla actually said it. And you also know why you want to say it. Because we have a problem. The problem is, I think, what the Alter set out in the very beginning. How do we negotiate this point that the brothers could have done something so bad to want to conspire to kill Yosef and then eventually only settle on selling Yosef. This is terrible. So therefore, if I can now create a new narrative, and the new narrative is, no, the brothers followed Torah, and the brothers put him on trial, and the brothers found him guilty, and Yosef was wrong for what he did. It also makes things easier, because then all the suffering that Yosef goes through is his own fault. On the other hand, there's this other slight possibility, and I don't know if you want to go there, and we already touched it last week. How much do you want to blame the victim? Ribono Shel Olam, right? Yosef is a victim. Yosef was kidnapped. They conspired to kill him. And now we're saying, yes, and he deserved it. And if we find him alive, we're going to do it to him again. So please, I mean, there's a problem there. Which means, and Chazal understand this. And I'm going to point out, this is Lashla saying this. And Lashla, you know, is convinced, and he convinces lots of people afterwards. And it could be that someone's going to find a source earlier than Lashla. It could be, I don't know. But that's the earliest that I've seen people quote, which essentially means you're having somebody who's essentially an early Achron, relatively early Achron, has an approach to what happened over here, and it ends up having an incredible amount of impact. Yeah, so why not go to Yaakov? Ask a shayla of Yaakov. By the way, you say Yaakov is a Gadol Hador. Some Michael, I see, asked that question. There was another Gadol Hador at the time who was still alive, and that was Yitzchak. Go over to Yitzchak, you know. No, but you know, it sounds as very much like this is what they call in Hebrew a mishpat sadeh. It very much is a mishpat sadeh. That it's like a kangaroo court, which is done out there in the field. You find somebody, you try them, and you find them guilty, and then you carry out the punishment. Did he have his day in court? Did he have a lawyer? Was he read his Miranda? I can keep on going over here. There just seems to be, on a procedural level, as many problems are raised than are solved. But still, I understand the point. And now, if you think about it, it was already there in the Sforno a little bit, and it was already there in Rav Chaim Paltiel. No, the brothers at Tzadikim. The brothers at Tzadikim, then how do they do this? Okay, now, so let's create a narrative to defend them. But when you create the narrative to defend them, then you necessarily turn Yosef into the criminal in all of this. And as I said, talk about victim blaming, you know, there must be something which is uncomfortable. Now, part of what I found interesting about the whole Parsha is that there are multiple trials which take place. This is not the only trial. Where is there another trial that takes place? The other trial, supposedly at least, is this trial of Tamar. Where what happens? Yehuda finds out Tamar is pregnant, and Yehuda says, take her out and burn her. What right does he have to do that? Oh, so then we all, again, it's, by the way, a very similar thing, creates a narrative of a trial is taking place, and now she deserves to be killed. And then Yehuda's the judge. By the way, I can ask all the same questions again. Yehuda's the judge? Yehuda's not involved in this? Yehuda is not Pasul Edus again? Again, all the same questions come up, but no, Yehuda's the judge. Anybody know where the third trial takes place? With Eshet Potiphar. And there again we find a similar kind of approach, although let's take a look. Yeah, take a look at the Chizkuni. We are in source number 19. Ve'itneu obeta sohar, and Yosef was arrested and put in prison. So a couple of points. One, we all remember who Potiphar is. Right, Potiphar is Sar HaTabachim, which Onkelos tells us he's the chief executioner. Which means if there's one man in Egypt you don't want to start up with, it's most likely the chief executioner, because this is somebody who is not going to be a very nice person. Nonetheless, that is who this person is identified as. He's telling us that she wants to use the Code of Hammurabi. I'll tell you a secret about the Code of Hammurabi. Apparently, it was never implemented. It was the thing which they were supposed to live by, but from what I've read about it, it was actually never implemented as a real law. It was a theory, but it wasn't really a law. So, okay, but you want to claim Code of Hammurabi. Excellent. Let's go back to the Chizkuni. Yosef is accused of either rape or attempted rape of the wife of the chief executioner. Can anybody tell me, in a primitive society, even in some modern societies, what exactly would happen to him? I mean, like, he's the chief executioner. They would use him for practice, slowly. He would enjoy it. Like, what are you talking about? Why do they put him in prison? By the way, on top of all that, why do they put him in political prison? You put him in political prison because you're very worried about him. He's a political prisoner. He's dangerous. And this is the flip side of Yosef's incredible capabilities. So let's look at the Chizkuni. And again, Chizkuni, we're dealing about somebody who's from the time one of the Balei HaTosfot. V'yitneu al beit ha-sohar, lo ya ben mavet, ki lo hayu edim b'davar, rak l'chnichu b'mishpar. He goes, no, because they couldn't kill him because there are no witnesses. Are you kidding me? Again, sorry. Are you kidding me? They couldn't kill him because there was no witnesses? Are you telling me that ancient Egypt was more moral than probably most societies in the history of time? They didn't have witnesses, and therefore they couldn't kill him? Asirei HaMelech Ktiv Asirei. V'nimtza ba'agada. But he quotes a midrash for us. Shevi Yosef l'fnei HaMelech ba'Gavriel. And by the way, Gavriel is going to be one of our heroes today. Gavriel shows up. Gavriel's a malach. Gavriel shows up, kidmut ish, looking like a person. Vayomer. Imal HaMelech Tov. Now notice how the king gets involved in this as well, which is also quite unlikely. The chief executioner is not going to bring the king in because he's not going to give him a fair trial in front of the king. But anyway, the king is there and Gavriel has shown up and he says, Ima melech tov yitzaveh levdok bivigdehem. Please take a look at their clothing. Im bigdei ha'isha nikraim, if her clothing was ripped off, b'yadua shechzik by Yosef, lonsa, then you know that Yosef grabbed her trying to rape her. But if Yosef's clothing is ripped off of him, then therefore she ripped on his clothing in order to try to attack him. They went and they investigated. They saw that Yosef's clothing was in fact torn. And therefore they decided not to put him to death. Meaning, again, beautiful midrash trying to explain why Yosef wasn't put to death. We know why he's not put to death, because we still need him. We still need him, because we Bereshit isn't over yet. He couldn't be completely exonerated, because that would have embarrassed Eshet Potiphar, Lomar, Achenu da Davarki, Ansat Yosef, because then everyone would know what really happened. U'kohanei Mitzrayim danu dinzeh, and who were the ones who sat on the case? It was the Kohanim in Mitzrayim. U'lechein lo kana Yosef admatam bishnei hara'avon. And therefore, later on, Yosef didn't buy their lands. That's the Chok leMitzrayim, ad hayom hazeh, because he doesn't, not to buy the lands of the Kohanim, which means what we have is he subsequently pays them when he can. He pays them this, you know, what they, I don't want to say deserve, what he can pay them now. So this is all really fascinating because, again, now I just now pointed out, now we're up to three trials that take place in this parasha. So who would have imagined that the trials are actually, I mean, I guess the title we're going to have to choose is the imaginary trials and the real tribulations of Yosef, right? I guess that would be the title. You have a better one, you'll let me know, but that's what it is for now. But also what's interesting, and this is part of what I want to note as well, is that Yosef is thrown into prison and is a victim. Again, it could have been worse. He could have been killed. Yosef was a victim in terms of the brothers. And it's interesting that we find the imagination, either, you know, later or earlier imagination, saying there was a trial and there was a trial and there was a trial and all these trials. And by the way, trials generally indicate some level of, what word do you want to use? I can't hear. Of decency, it's, I don't know, there's a better word that I want that I'm not finding. That it's proper. And it's being done in the way that it should be done, which of course is part of the question that we have. Is that really the case? Is that really what's happened over here? Or is this really a very different story? So I want to now, and I just want to help you a little bit. Whenever I read Midrashim, and to a lesser extent commentaries, but there as well, you always want to go back to the text and saying, where are they getting this from? You know, where did this come from? What is it that they saw that took them there? So as I said, and we spent a bit of time with this in the beginning in terms of the brother, you want to defend the brothers, okay? But there's going to be collateral damage when you defend the brothers. You're going to hurt Yosef. But I think that there's something else which is going on over here. In order to get there, let's just remind ourselves of something which is easy to forget, but is probably the thing that we always need in mind from pretty much a little bit after we met Avraham all the way till the end of the book of Bereshit. We have a lot of imaginary ideas about what was the Judaism of these people, you know, what it was to be Jewish at that time. And it's not an easy question, what it was. Yes, we have this this possible Rashi. According to what I've read, it's that it was not in any of the early manuscripts of Rashi. Im lovon garti, v'taryag mitzvot shemarti. It's not there. It was added much later. Did Yaakov really say to Esav, I kept all taryag mitzvot? Right? Do we touch this last week? He married two sisters. That's not called keeping all taryag mitzvot. There are other things that, again, that we can question Yaakov about. So what does that even mean? But there is Judaism for them. Their Judaism consisted, and again, it could be more. Of course, at some point, we get other things thrown in. Brit Milah is thrown in. At some point, other laws are thrown in. Gid Anashe is thrown in. But what is the basic outlook, philosophy, idea? What are they looking at? What are they paying attention to? And the answer is, it's the Brit Bein HaBetarim. That's the game plan. You know, as much as today we have dozens of different Nevi'im or prophecies that we keep in mind, Nivu'ah, that we keep in mind, well, maybe there's a fulfillment of this and maybe this means that and so on. They really had one. All the others that take place are just repeating this one again and again. There is one prophecy. The land of Israel will be yours. Your children are going to be enslaved. The duration will be between 400 years or perhaps as low as four generations. And I'm just going to point out that if we have to get to Egypt, don't you realize that that's what this story is all about? By the way, you can argue with me and say, well, who said they had to get to Egypt? Okay, that's a point that we could debate. But they have to start the exile somehow. And the exile is going to begin because somebody's going to go down there, somebody's going to get there, somebody is, it's going to begin. And now, of course, going backwards, all of us understand the way that Am Yisrael gets to the Galut, which is prophesized in the Brit Bein HaBetarim, to V'avdum V'inu Otam Arbamot Shana, the way it's going to happen, ultimately, again, we're playing Monday morning quarterback. I don't know if that works in South Africa, but we're playing Monday morning quarterback, and we're going and saying, okay, this is what happens. Maybe it's a little unfair, but it's very clear what's going on. It's time. God decided that it's time. I want to go back and look at the verses a little bit, but maybe even I'll make things easy for us today. I'll make it easy for you. Sometimes I don't make it easy to the end. You want us to wait more? I'll tell you exactly what's going on. What does a court do? A court judges, right? A Beit Din, Beit Mishpat, Din. What's going on in this whole section is Midat HaDin is taking place over here. That's what they felt. That's what's going on. There is very strong Midat HaDin. So one way of articulating Midat HaDin, but of course, okay, one second, one way of articulating it is saying, oh, there's a court going on, there's a judgment going on. But of course, the reality is that the real court which is going on is not the court going down below where the brothers put him on trial, or they put him on trial, or she was put on trial. The reality of where the din is taking place is up in heaven, because God has decided that something is going to start happening right now. And let's go back and now take a look and see, you know, what we can see, what we have time for, because as I said, we have lots and lots and lots and lots of things to look at. So going back to source number one, Biknu bo echav aviv shamar et davar. And the brothers were jealous. And Rashi tells us shamar et davar means that he waited in anticipation, when will this come true? Which means Yaakov, if he's a betting man, he puts his money down on Yosef, that the brothers will then down. Of course, one of the things the brothers said to him, Hamloch timloch aleinu, right? Hamshol timshol banu. And the truth is that one of them came true and the other one didn't come true. Or at least one came true fairly soon and the other one took a long time. What I'm referring to is the one that comes true almost right away is he will be a Moshel. The difference between a Moshel and a melech, very famously, the Vilna Gaon explained that a melech is coronated and we accept and we love, and a moshel is a dictator. And the Ibn Ezra, I believe, says it right here on this pasuk about Yosef. The Gura says it about the pasuk, Kila Hashem Lucha u'moshel bagayim, and he says it about Rosh Hashanah. But it's right over here. Are you going to be a melech and be a moshel? So the answer is, Yosef will become a moshel. They will all bow down to him, but they will never accept him. But he will never be the melech. Later on, by Am Yisrael, we're actually going to find that there will be Malchut Yisrael, there will be Yeravam, there will be a kingship coming down from Yosef, and there will be lots and lots of tribes who are going to follow him. And therefore, Yosef being a melech, I mean, and you all realize how problematic all of that is, but that is something that happens later on. So, but Yaakov waits for this. Shamar Tadavav. V'yachu echav lirot etzon aviyim b'shchem. And Shchem already is a place which should be a little scary for us. Yaakov was scared of Shechem. So it's interesting that that's where they go right back to the scene of the crime. But Yom Yisrael Yosef, and notice, and you can do this in this whole parsha, when does it say Yaakov? When does it say Yisrael? It never says that Yaakov loved Yosef. It says Yisrael loved Yosef, ki ben zakunim alo. Which means it's Yisrael realizes that Yosef is so capable. So Vayomer Yisrael O Yosef, which already gave us a hint, and I'm willing to go so far, it is already in my imagination, it's pshat. It's a national issue going on. It's not the father telling the son. Yisrael tells Yosef, Halo achecha ro'im b'shchem, l'chavesh l'chaleim v'yomer lo hineni. Here I am. V'yomer lo, lechna ra'et shlom achecha. Go and see what's going on. V'et shlom atzon, v'ashivenu davar. Let me know what's going on. So the early relationship that the brothers are so upset with him because Yosef goes and tells on them, Yaakov facilitates this. Yaakov is the beneficiary of this. Yaakov very much wants this to happen. And I want to say all this in a slightly deeper way right now. You have a pasuk that Reuven goes and he beds Bilhah. And actually it's very important. It says that Bilhah is a pilegish of his father. And it says that Yisrael hears, and then it says Bnei Yaakov Shneimasar, which means Yaakov made a decision right then that the 12 are going to stay together. I will not let the family break up, and I'm going to hold them together, which means somehow he's able to discipline Reuven. Reuven is, you know, is cut down. Reuven, you know, we don't hear from Reuven again in terms of trying to take this leadership position. And yes, we can start to guess why Reuven thought he could or he should be doing this. Maybe the brothers were upset in one of the topics from last week in terms of Yaakov, you know, bowing down to Esav. Maybe they're upset with the way that Yaakov behaves. Maybe they're upset with Yaakov's lack of response in terms of Shechem, in terms of what happened there. There is a tension there between Yaakov hears that his daughter was hurt. The brothers hear, Nivala Asabi Yisrael. They hear about something dramatic happened in Israel on a national level, which means it could be the brothers are feeling, you know, we're a nation and so on, and he's not Yaakov. Okay, it's just not there yet. It's going to happen. But Yaakov does an incredible job of dealing with Reuven, and by the way, for that matter, dealing with Shimon and Levi. He deals with the problems, but he always holds them together as a family. Which, I mean, if you really think about it, Yishmael, objectively, I know you could tell me Midrashim, objectively, Yishmael did something which wasn't as bad as Reuven, and Yishmael gets sent away while Reuven is able to stay in the family. For that matter, as bad as we think Esav is, I can argue that Shimon and Levi do worse than Esav. Again, look at that. Yishmael is accused of Gilead Ariot, and picking in all kinds of women, and Esav is accused of all kinds of bloodshed. So, okay, now just take a look in Yaakov's family. You have Reuven, who, again, unless you want to do another cover-up and cover-up for him, Shimon and Levi, it's interesting, nobody tries to cover that up. No, they didn't really kill them. They almost killed them. They were going to kill them. They got them drunk on Purim. That's what means they killed them. I mean, all kinds of things. By the way, you know why they gave them all the Brit Milah before they wiped out the city. Because if they would have just wiped out the city, then there would have been an investigation of the United Nations. This way they converted them all into Judaism, so a bunch of Jews were killed, nobody cared. Anyway, okay, I'll behave. Beli neder. So Yaakov does an unbelievable job of being able to discipline, but to keep the family together. And Yosef is a part of this. Yosef is the one who reports to the father And because that's what his father wants. I need to know what's going on. And Yaakov then will deal with issues. And now you see that this, what Yosef had done earlier, and the brothers are upset with him, it's something which is really, it's Yaakov's doing. Not only that, all the other brothers are out in the field. All the other brothers are working as shepherds. And Yaakov was, and Yosef was described as the shepherd of the brothers who are shepherds. Which means Yosef is, he's the shepherd. He's the one who's taking care. He is the prince. He's the king in waiting. But as we said, that doesn't actually work out. So back to Pasuk Yudalid. Vayomer lo lech no ra'ei shlom achech v'shlom atzon v'shirin adavar v'yashlichehu me'emek chevron v'yo shchema. He goes from the emek of Chevron. And there we have our famous Rashi, which we will look at because, you know, the only reason to say something is famous is to make people feel inadequate when they don't know it. But this is a Rashi that we do need to know. Let's look at source 13. We've got a bunch of Rashis here. Ediba Tamra'a. So again, this goes to this, what did he do? This feeds the Sforno and Chaim Paltiel, and then later on the others. Ediba Tamra'a. Ko Rasha haya ra'ya be'achav, b'nei le'ya yamagid laviv. Whatever he saw something wrong, he told their father. Shiu ochlim eivr menachai, umizalzazim b'nei ashfachot. There was a midah keneged bita that all of these things, on some way, happened to Yosef as well. So that's the first Rashi I wanted us to see. Second, me'emek chevron, v'lo chevron bahar. So Rashi over here quotes this teaching, saying, "Hold it, this does not work in terms of the topography. Chevron is up on a very, very high mountain. V'lo chevron bahar shenema yelu b'negev ayu ad chevron." Again, it's a little funny. You have to bring a pasuk. We could just travel there. Rashi was never there. Elam eitza amuka, something deep in Chevron. What's deep in Chevron? There's a grave there. Elam eitza amuka shel oto tzadika kavur bechevron lekayema shenemar laavrim bein abtarim ki geryer zaracha be'eretz lolahem. Which means Rashi's already telling us what's really going on over here. What's really going on over here is this is the beginning of the story. You go to Shechem, makom muchan leparanut, sham kilkulu ashvatim, sham inu et dina, sham nechlaka malchut beit David, right, with Rechavam and so on. Also, it's interesting in all of this, you know, when we read before that Yosef was guilty of, he was morid b'malchut, that he rejected the malchut of Yehuda. That's what the Shlach taught us, and that's why there was a trial. You do realize how anachronistic that is. Yehuda was not chosen yet. Actually, Yehuda, if you were a betting person at that moment, you would not have bet for Yehuda, and if you would have, you would have gotten very good odds. What do you mean Yehuda's king? First of all, you have others before him. Unless you're going to say at this point, well, Reuven's out, Shimon and Levi are out, so Yehuda by default, but Yehuda should have been out as well. Yehuda's behavior in terms of Tamar should have disqualified him as well. Whoever would have suspected that Yehuda is going to come back, he's the one who said to sell Yosef, and that was a terrible thing to do. So now look what they did. No, selling Yosef was a good thing to do. So it's a good thing to do. Yehuda's already king. If Yehuda's already king, he's rejecting Yehuda. But it's very circular. Because who in the world made Yehuda king by this point? Yaakov is the one who does it, but it's on his deathbed. Why are you assuming at this point that Yehuda's king? So I'm saying that point is not as simple as it sounded when it was presented the first time. I do want to point out something else in passing. This Medrash Tanchuma, which said that the Shechina was there as well. Yisrael Havet Yosef, source number 11. L'fisha Rabbi Chalamosha Tidlam Loch V'Gid Laviv Kanu Bo Achiv. Right, that's where the whole anger comes from. So that's the Eivr Ben Achai. All of this is there in this midrash. Now notice something here, which we're still going to get to. V'Yimtzaehu Ish. Ein ish ha'amor kan ela Gavriel. By the way, it's the second time Gavriel made it into our subtext today. The other time that we found Gavriel was the one by the trial of Yosef later on. So just keep that in mind also. They took him v'ashtichot to abora, right? Bor in b'mayim nachashim akurim ma'asaruvein halach v'yashav v'echem minarim. And he's waiting in order to get Yosef out. So 9 of the brothers are sitting there. Amru l'chuvenim karuli shmeilim. They say, let's sell him. Hein molichoto liktzvot amidbar. Amdu machru be'ez, right? They sell him for a certain amount of money. Then, after they sell him, something else happens. They make a declaration. Amru. Nachrim beinenu. We're going to make a decree together. A cherim. Shelo yagid echad mehem liyakov avinu. That none of us will tell Yaakov. Amulem Yehuda, Reuben ain't Okan. Reuben's not here. Ve'ein cherem et chaim elu basar. We need a minion, which is also interesting. Ma asu shetfu Hakadosh Baruch Hu ba'oto acheim shelo yagid laviim. They said, okay, we need 10 Hakadosh Baruch Hu. You know, center. You're the 10th for the minion. You're the one who's going to agree, and none of us are going to tell. And they made God promise as well. By the way, that was as close as they could say. That this is what the altar brought as a proof that there was actually a trial. This was his proof. It doesn't say it. It says the brothers sold him, then they conspired, and they said, let's none of us tell him. That's it. There's nothing about a trial over here. Kevin Shayaru Reuven Belailo Toabor, when Reuven comes back and he sees he's not there, he gidu lo otamasa, they tell him what happened. Va'af ve'etacherim v'shatak, and he also is quiet. Va'akadosh Baruch Hu, afal pisha katov bo magid dvar v'yakov, and as well, even though God would normally tell things to Yaakov, that's why Yaakov did not know about this, because they all decided to keep it quiet. And I'll point out again, this is one of the sources he brought as the proof that there was a trial, because even God was part of the trial. Everything is great except for one problem, and the problem is there's no trial. Let's now go back, and as I said, Rashi already, you know, took us to an important place. Now let's go back to the text itself and see how much further we can get. Back in source number one, and we were up to Emek Chevron, and he's taken out from the Emek Chevron, and then something happens. Pasuk Tedvav, v'yimtzeu ish v'nei Torah besade v'yishaleu ish lamar mativakesh. He meets a man in the field. He meets a man in the field because he's wandering around looking for his brothers, because he was told to go to Shechem and his brothers aren't in Shechem, which means he gets to Shechem, his brothers aren't there. So what should have happened, al pi derech hateva, what should have been the next step? He should have thrown up his hands and said, I tried, I looked around, I looked left, I looked right, I looked up, I looked down, they're not here. He goes home, tells his father, I couldn't find them. And if he couldn't find them, so then what happens? Nothing happens. He goes home, and there is no Mechirat Yosef, and the Jews don't go down to Egypt, and the whole story doesn't take place, but he bumps into a man in the middle of the field. So who is this man? And let's now go back again. Hope we're not driving you crazy with up and down and so on. Let's go back again and look at Rashi. Who is this man? Rashi writes, Tedvav Yomtzeo Ish Ze Gavriel Shenemar Ish Gavriel. So now, what just now happened? First of all, who is Gavriel? Gavriel is Midah of Gvura. Midah of Gvura is Midah Hadin. Gavriel is somebody who's involved in Din. By the way, Gavriel, I'll just say a couple more things about him. I have a book right over here. I have a very nice sefer. Everybody should have one. I've quoted this before, but now I get to show it to you. This is my book, which is called Malchei Elyon, which is an encyclopedia of Malachim. Half of it's on good malachim, half of it's on bad malachim, all kinds of malachim by Reuven, Margoliot, anything you wanted to know. So you go, you look up, and the best part, it says that I bought it for 12 shekel. I don't know what year that was, but that's the best part of it here. So it tells me, anything you want to know about Gavriel? Gavriel is Gvura, Gavriel is Din, Gavriel is fire, by the way, it's fire. Which means, who's the one who's going to grab Avram out of the furnace? It's going to be Gavriel. By the way, that itself, there's more to discuss. Who's the one who's going to be there when Yehuda says, throw Tamar in the fire? Notice fire is there. Okay, Gavriel's going to show up. Who's the one who shows up by the Mishpat over there, by the Din, by Yosef? It's Gavriel. Who's the one over here, the man he meets in the field? It's Gavriel. But all of this comes down to one point. There's Din taking place over here. There's Midat HaDin. So now look what the imagination did. There's Din taking place, so therefore it's Gavriel. But there's Din taking place, so therefore there's a Beis Din over here. Even if there's no Beis Din, but there's Din over here. Meaning, what we need to do sometimes is not to be so literal, but to be able to strip past the literal reading and understand what is it that it's trying to tell me. And over here, what's taking place is din. What is the din? The din is there was a brit ben aptarim. There was a deal which was made. And the deal which was made is that the banim are going to end up going down to Egypt, which means you could go from Hebron to Shechem, and you're not, but God wants you to end up in Egypt. You're going to end up in Egypt. And how are you going to end up in Egypt? You're going to meet some guy in the middle of the field. So on one level, I can say, who was that guy? I have no idea who he was. And then I can say, but if he's the guy who facilitated for them to go and to get eventually, for him to get to find the brothers, who are then going to do to him what they did, he's a malach. Why is he a malach? He's a malach because that's what God wanted to happen. Sometimes we're malachim. Sometimes we're the ones who make things happen because God wants it to happen. And sometimes we may know about it, and sometimes we'll have no idea about it, but we were the ones in a certain place at a certain time to make something happen because that was Ratzon Hashem. Ratzon Hashem was for Yosef to end up in Egypt. That was Ratzon Hashem. And therefore it's Gavriel, which is a malach who helps create din. That's what's taking place. So Yosef is going to go north. He's going to go to Shechem. He's going to then, instead of getting lost, he's going to go to Dothan. And instead of the whole story ending right then, he's going to end up, and you're going to say, hold it, how did all that happen? And he just could have gone home, told his father, couldn't find him. No, this was already Ratzon Hashem. By the way, you can now go one step further. If this is Ratzon Hashem, did this mean the brothers had no free will? No. It's like going back in Egypt. It's Ratzon Hashem, the Jews are going to be there. But they were not the ones who had to do it. The Egyptians were not the ones who had to do it, and they didn't have to do it the way that they did it. And yes, there's all kinds of questions that you can ask. Okay, I accept the questions, and I am willing to also accept that God does more micromanaging than we sometimes wonder. One of the things that occurred to me as we, I'm not sure how clearly I said this last week. I give too many talks, so I forget what I said by each one, so I apologize. But one of the things that occurred to me, and I did say this here last week, is that when it came to Esav, the reason that Esav does not, the reason that Esav does not kill Yaakov is because just like by Avimelech and just like by Lavan, God comes and tells him not to. That's all. Tells him not to. Over here, sometimes God acts in a way because some things have to happen. Over here, the Yosef has to end up. Now, do the brothers have blood on their hands? Yes, they do. Because they had no right to say, we're going to kill him. They had no right to sell him, which means they did not have to be the malach for all this to happen. They did not have to be the ones. And if God wanted it to happen, then on the way back, he could have been kidnapped and ended up in Egypt. Again, the story could happen one way or the other, but nonetheless, there is din in the air. That's my point over here. All the way through, there's din in the air. So this imagination to say that the Shlah apparently is the first one to say, no, they made a Beit Din, and therefore they're the ones who sent him. All of that is very nice. All of that is very nice. But nonetheless, it's not there. But there is Midat HaDin. And that's really what I wanted to get to today, is that all the way through there's Midat HaDin. And even when I, and it's interesting, then that's why they keep telling you, oh, that's Gavriel, and that was Gavriel. But it's interesting what Gavriel does, because Gavriel is somebody involved in Din, but Gavriel, on the one hand, helps Yosef not be killed, even though Yosef's going to end up being sent to Egypt. Gavriel still is a malach, meaning he's not the satan. Gavriel is Midat HaDin, and Gavriel is going to be the one who's going to help Tamar not be killed, even though there is some kind of a din taking place over there. He's the one who's going to help Yosef not be killed, even though he's going to end up back in prison. So you have Midat HaDin over here, but the Midat HaDin wants him to keep being alive. The Midat HaDin is going to be treating him in a strict way, and that's really what's going on in this whole parsha over here. It's very, very harsh. It's very, very strict. It's very, very sad. It's very, very difficult. Now you want to go back to the beginning again and go to the Altov Slobodka and ask yourself the question, no, have we read everything wrong? Is there really a Beit Din over here? Do they act out Pidin Torah? I understand the approach. I just need to say it. I'm just going to point out again that unfortunately the various proofs that he wanted to bring are just not there. Meaning there was not a trial. It doesn't say that. Yes, the Shlah said it. So realize what he did. He took the Shlah and he wrote it back into the Sforno. Sforno didn't say it. The Sforno said that it's self-defense. Okay, self-defense is very different from saying that they actually had a trial. A trial is much more difficult to say. But once there's a trial, so it's Din and it's Torah, they did the right thing, and if they did such the right thing, so then why were they ever punished? You know, why do we ever say anything negative about it? Okay, so that's part of what he has to, you know, then explain going on. But again, my point is just to notice over here that there is din in the air. That's it. There's din in the air all the way through. There's a strictness over here. There is a process which is taking place, which means as we're moving now to the end of Bereshit, we're actually going to the beginning of Shemot. We're all going to be slaves very soon. How is that going to happen? So God is moving all of these chess pieces. And yes, we have Bechira Chavshas, and that's really interesting. And we're making decisions. And there are things there which are happening which should not be happening. But nonetheless, that is what's being identified over here. That's why Gavriel shows up in a whole bunch of the Midrashim. And that's why these courts end up in all of these places. It's because there's Midat Hadin over here taking place. And Yosef is being brought down, not because he's guilty, because there's Midat Hadin over here. Yosef, again, I don't want to go there to blame the victim. Can you then say, oh, but he did this and he shouldn't have done this? Yes, but he's not guilty that he should have been put to death. There's no Morid B'Malchut. These people, I'll say it one more time, they couldn't have sat on a Beit in Alpidin Torah. They hated him. They were brothers. They couldn't have been witnesses. They couldn't have been judged. They could not have done any of these things. But nonetheless, what is here is Midat Hadin. And that's what we need to do when we read sometimes Midrashim or even commentaries. We need to be a little bit more sophisticated and understand what it is they're trying to tell us. And all of this was there. All of this is there in the text. But sometimes we're infantile when we read. We get stuck on the level of the veneer of how things are explained, and then we don't want to work so hard to take off the veneer and go inside and say, now what is it really teaching me over here? What is really taking place? And that is that there's a large process. And that large process, really, it's that Rashi, it's Me'emek Chevron. It's the Brit Ben Haftarim. That's the answer to the question. What is going on over here? What is God doing in this world? Answer, Brit Ben Haftarim is now we're moving towards that. Now we're moving towards the slavery. Now we're moving towards the servitude. Okay, that's what's going on. And that's the only answer we really needed. So you're going to go in the wrong direction? You're going to go north to Shechem? Okay. So there's going to be a guy you're going to meet along the way. He's going to be a Malach. He's going to be Gavriel. He's going to be Midat Hadin. Because he's going to make sure that this is going to take place. And that's really the story which is happening over here. And then there's lots of things which, again, we need to be able to separate between Pshat and then beautiful interpretations which are really based upon imaginations.